Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
And I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and it may be a tough, jagged little pill to swallow, but if you're friends with Aladdin and Hamilton, then there's no way you won't love the new nanny, Doubtfire. However, if The Lion King is right for you, then go to Chicago and find the only thing you need, a wicked good time. Joining us today are the usual members of A Chorus Line, including Kevin Bombay Dreams Jaeger.
So good. It always makes me think of Aaron.
And Kimberly, give us a best ensemble Tony Game Master, an unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Please.
And with us today is someone you may have seen in Aladdin or Moulin Rouge. You definitely saw her in the new movie Ensemble. Let's give a big broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Corey Michelle. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. That intro was lit.
Yeah, that's your new bio. We're gifting it to you as your new bio.
I'll do it. I'll take it.
Great. If I actually opened up a playable and saw that, I'd be like, what have you done?
Well, you know, they limit our word counts, so I don't know if I
Yeah, exactly. You can cut it down. I give you permission. But thank you so much for joining us. We're really happy you're here. But before we get started with anything, what are you drinking?
What are we drinking?
You know, I just put a little tiny pinch of some vodka in with a little soda.
Something
like that, you know.
Classic.
Classic.
Kevin, what are you drinking?
I am drinking some tequila on the rocks with lemonade. Because I had it in my fridge and I was like, all right, that sounds good. Because I didn't want to, I tried just tequila on the rocks, but I was like, oh, it's not that bad of a Monday. So I needed something. So the lemonade is like a nice splash of lemonade. It's good. I enjoy it.
I imagine Kevin pouring a glass of tequila and then finding just the lemonade powder and mixing that in.
Like a country time lemonade.
Yeah, exactly. Lemonade, quotes. Yeah. Kimberly, what are you drinking?
I went to a distillery this weekend.
Oh.
And I got a new bottle of gin.
That's a beautiful bottle.
Great Nine from the Dennings Point Distillery in Beacon, New York.
Cool. Love
and it. Everything is light blue, so it's my favorite. And I just have a gin and tonic with, randomly enough, Jay put a little lemonade in here when he handed it to me.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
Wow. He was like, we don't have limes. Here's a lemonade.
I love it. That's awesome.
Ryan, well, what are you drinking?
Oh, I forgot me. I'm drinking tequila on the rocks, but the rocks have all melted. So it's tequila watered down, I guess, at this point.
Yeah.
Still gets the job done. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. You are officially our first season 3 guest of Broad Wasted. So,
welcome.
And the only first guest of season 3 of Broad Wasted. part one, that is. But yeah, we're super excited to have you. So let's kind of just get started. What's your favorite musical?
Ooh, Trixie. I would say probably The Lion King because it was the first musical I ever saw.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's great. We lost Kevin to the internet.
Sure, he'll be back.
And he'll be back. But if you don't hear his wild laughter, that is why he just popped out of the Zoom. But yeah, have you seen Lion King recently? Like, do you still, I guess my question is like, how much do you revisit it?
I've only seen it one other time other than my first time. Mm-hmm. And it was just as magical, but I was a lot older. When I started Aladdin, they'd given us tickets to see The Lion King. Sometimes we get tickets to see each other's shows. Mm-hmm. And that was the second time I'd seen it. And I thought it was so incredible. And honestly, I was nervous to go see it again because it had been so long. And, you know, like that circle of life moment, I just was like, I don't know. Nothing as good as this is the first time. And is it going to be as good? So sure. I was nervous, but it was just as good. It was incredible. Yeah. But I feel like maybe I shouldn't see it again because now it's like, I don't want to jinx it. You know, it sure. was really great both times. And I still love it. So I think I'm going to leave it at two.
I love it.
In the memories for a little while.
Yeah. Leave a couple years.
I was going to say, when you were growing up, did you have a movie musical that kind of got you started? Was it just like community stuff? Was it through school tours? Like what bit you bug wise? Like where did that come from?
Well, I wasn't really a musical theater kid growing up. Cool. I wanted to be a dancer. So I was like focused on being a ballerina. That was kind of like what I wanted to do. But when I went to high school, I started doing theater in high school. And I had one musical that I had the cassette tape of that I always watched over and over was Little Shop of Horrors. And I still have that cassette tape in my house. Sure. And I love it. But the first musical I ever did was Fame. Mm. And I like that kind of, the bug bit me in Fame and I was like, this is so fun. Like you get to dance and sing and do whatever, but dance was still the thing I wanted to do. So I didn't really get into the musical theater world in terms of like really, really pursuing it until after college, honestly. So I was kind of like a late bloomer on that front because I had to kind of get the concert dance bug out of my mm-hmm. system, really like the broke bug because I was broke.com doing concerts. And I was like, bug. I can't live in New York like this.
But I have to sing.
Yeah. I got to figure out how to sing so I can make some money.
Oh my gosh. That's so good.
That tracks.
Yeah.
Concert dance world.
Yeah.
So I guess flash forward, like let's talk about your, because you were in Aladdin and Moulin Rouge.
Was that your Broadway debut?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about the differences in, you know, starting, being in the cast of some of those big musicals as an ensemble member, the difference between opening those shows, I guess there's a huge difference that we'll end up talking about. But just in kind of like your debut versus you have it under your belt and you're opening another big show, you know, the processes to how you navigated both of those experiences.
Well, you know, with Aladdin, everything was so fresh and new. Like it just, first of all, I couldn't even believe I'd freaking booked the show because non-equity. Like I went to one of the last calls that they were looking for two more people in the ensemble. One mm-hmm. as a sling and one as the track that I ended up doing. And I had gone in for the show before, made it to final callbacks, but didn't get it. And I was just like, all right, I'm just going to go to this, but I'm probably not going to get it. I actually had a flight to go do another regional gig that next day. So I was like, I can't go to callbacks if there are any callbacks. Like, I'm just not getting this. So I'm just going to go and like have fun sure. and live my life. And all of it just felt so fresh and exciting when I did end up getting it. I'm like, it's a Disney show. It's like my Broadway debut. I can't believe this. And we did our out of town in Toronto. So we were out of the country. So that was a huge change between that and Moulin Rouge because we were in Boston for Moulin Rouge. So being out of the country was like a whole nother set of things that we had to deal with, with, you know, the housing and all that kind of stuff. And it was winter in Toronto during Aladdin and summer in Boston during Moulin Rouge, like completely different experiences on that front. And then just the putting up the show though, I think it was equally stressful because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot. It's like you have these two big properties that people have all these very high expectations around.
Kevin is back.
Kevin's back.
Welcome back.
I got so excited about lemonade. I was just like, you're drinking lemonade too? And then I just like destroyed my computer.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin, that was actually Kevin's corner by leaving.
More segment for you.
Let's risk.
Continue.
Yeah, but you know, like both Moulin Rouge and Aladdin are like these beloved, like cult classics that people are obsessed with. So there's sure. all this pressure and expectation behind these brands and these entities. And I felt that as an ensemble member on both ends in terms of the creation, right? Because everyone wanted it to be perfect in some kind of way, or perfect in terms of the way that their vision was for the show. So there was definitely a lot of stress around that. But for me personally, doing it the second time around, I definitely felt a lot more grounded coming into Moulin Rouge as an original company member, because I knew what to expect from going out of town. I knew what to expect in terms of like the changes and like how many changes would be happening so frequently. And I also felt really, really comfortable coming into Moulin Rouge because I have worked with Sonia Taye before. I knew her very well. I knew a lot of people in the ensemble. It was very different than my experience with Aladdin because I was the newbie. Nobody knew who I was and I didn't know who anybody was because I was, like I said, just this non-equity girl who booked her Broadway show. So I didn't really have the relationships that a lot of people had with Aladdin, but they grew to be my family. But it was definitely a little bit more difficult of a transition with Aladdin because I was leaving the country and leaving my family and not really knowing anyone, you know? So Moulin Rouge was easier.
You were traveling on magic carpet for the first time, which is like really stressful.
Really stressful.
As opposed to just like a magical elephant, which is like, we all understand that, but like, I get it. I get it. That's really stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very stressful ride. Very bumpy.
Amen. Now, was it also a different thing where it was like, did you know, I don't know if they asked this, but did you know Aladdin as a kid?
Yeah.
So like, was it like
what was Aladdin like as a kid? Was he nice? Was he?
I did. He was my bestie.
Yes. but like, I feel like with like those songs, so many of them are so memorable to us as from childhood. And then you go into a show like Moulin Rouge, where it's like basically all the songs we listen to in like the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and today.
Yeah, are like that's ever been written.
and there's like what, like 300 or so? There's like some crazy number of songs.
Not that much, 72, but still a lot.
But I'm sure
like 300.
I'm sure during like rehearsals, as you're cutting things and adding things, it felt like 300.
Oh, definitely. I was like, ooh, that song too. Wow.
What has that been like? Like having your Broadway career kind of be the songs that you knew from a different world that you get to perform on like a Broadway stage.
You know what's so amazing? No one's ever asked me that question before. I've done a lot of interviews and I've never been asked that. So I've never even really thought about
it. Don't answer him. Don't do it.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
I've never thought about that, but it's actually kind of cool. Like it's really cool to be kind of intertwined into so much of people's childhoods and also just their growing up. You know, Moulin Rouge, the songs that are in Moulin Rouge, like I have very visceral memories from some of those songs, like riding in the car with my friend's Jeep in high school and like all those different things, because those songs just bring up a lot of nostalgia. So it's really cool. And the same thing with Aladdin, like, and I actually have this moment of that I will never forget where we were sitting in a room with Alan Menken. It was myself and the two other attendants, along with the woman who was playing Princess Jasmine at the time, Courtney Reed. And we were Alan was literally writing a new song for us. And I had this whole moment where I was just like, we are literally sitting with Alan Menken. Like, he wrote our childhood and we're getting a song written for us right now by him. Like,
that's wild.
Crazy. It was so cool. So cool.
That's such an awesome experience.
Yeah. That was amazing.
I love that.
Yeah. And I'm just like putting myself in that room and I'm like, I would shake through the floor. Like, like what you do.
No, like, honestly though, yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. I mean, we were all so nervous and he's the nicest person ever, but it just was like, wow, I can't believe like he's such a genius. And like all of our favorite songs growing up were probably written by him, you know,
yeah.
All
oh,
of
them. Yeah, totally. 1,000%.
So cool. So cool.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like your career is going like elementary school, Aladdin, middle school. Well, I was in middle school when Moulin Rouge came out. And so I was yes. like, and then like yes. the middle school, like heart throbbiness that is Moulin yes. Rouge.
Totally. So much and drama. So
we'll get you to high school. I don't know what that will be.
Yeah. I don't know what that'll be either, but I'm in breath.
that's super interesting. So like, what was the, you were doing two shows that mean a lot to people for nostalgia purposes and for growing up and things that they really connected to at certain times in their life. What were the differences in audiences in terms of being in those original casts and like the audiences well,
all those
that come
children
in
that go to Moulin Rouge?
Well, just the idea, well, yeah. I mean, just the idea of, yeah, all those babies in the Moulin Rouge audience.
I mean, you'd be surprised how young they go sometimes. I'm like, fair. Oh, she's a booster seat. Wow.
But just in terms of like okay. nostalgia reactions from audiences and what you saw and felt and how people responded back to the material within the moment.
Yeah.
I mostly mean, the babies.
We want to know what that babies felt about Moulin Rouge. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, equally magical, completely different. Like, obviously with Aladdin, there was a mixture of little kids who were just like, wow, this is so incredible. But more so people our age who had a connection to Aladdin, because Aladdin is less so the cartoon that the little ones nowadays are watching. Like, they were obsessed with Frozen, right? Like, right, Aladdin sure. was more our generation that are now like, we're going on date nights to come and see Aladdin. So that was actually the cooler thing was like seeing all these young adults who were coming with their significant others and be like, oh my God, the magic carpet ride in a whole new world. And, da, 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 da. And like the gasp that we would hear every night when the magic carpet would go up. And that was so magical to experience as a part of the cast. And we would hear it every night.
Was the gasp from the audience or was it from the cast? Because you realized it was actual magic on stage.
Every night. Well,
every night.
Oh,
we told you before we started we would be asking the hard-hitting questions.
The you people
I make the magic.
The yeah, yeah, people must know. The people must know.
They must know how much magic is going on yeah. over there at the yeah. New Amsterdam. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And then with Moulin Rouge, like, and also because the out of towns with both of them, because they were, I mean, Aladdin had an out of town, like, I guess maybe 5 or 6 years prior to when we did Toronto, but no one had seen these properties really ever. So everyone was hearing all the things that we were doing in terms of the arrangements and everything for the first sure. time. And so like those audiences, especially in the out of towns, were insane, but specifically for Moulin Rouge, because we were so close to New York being in Boston. So people from New York could just hop on a train and come up, and literally everybody from New York, they didn't wait till we came to Broadway. They were on that train coming to Boston, and the audiences were unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. Like literally every song that came on, people were screaming. It was like we're at a concert. Like,
yeah.
People were insane and just so excited to hear all of these songs because they had, I think Moulin Rouge had done a really good job of keeping the songs under wraps. So nobody knew what yeah. we were really doing with it. And so it was just really cool. And also in Boston, they served you your drinks at your seat. So people were really just lit.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Before the show even started because they had chair service. So
yeah, everybody was that, Moulin Rouge, literally.
Oh yeah. They were all the Moulin Rouge. Okay. Yeah,
the colors it's of actually the cabaret rainbow. Tables, right?
Yeah, we had the cabaret tables, but it didn't matter. I mean, it was people were all over well, actually, the town.
So I'm thinking, did you perform at both Tonys?
I did.
Tell us about the difference in those, because they were very different.
Couldn't have been more different, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Aladdin, we did it the standard, get on the bus, like the crazy day where you have the show the night before, then you got this crazy early call time, then you have a show, then you go back to Radio City, then you know, it was mm-hmm. insane. And so exhausting, but again, these are all firsts for me. So I was just like, this is cool. And I'm exhausted. I don't care.
Field trip.
Right.
Yeah. So it was amazing. And like, I guess I didn't realize that, like, how in and out it was. Like, I thought we'd be able to like chill at Radio City and like do the whole thing. I didn't realize that everyone just performs and they get on a bus and leave. Like, it's just, sure. And then you leave. But it was really cool, obviously, because it's Radio City. It's like the most iconic place to be, I feel like, in New York City. And then with Moulin Rouge, because of COVID, we did it live from the theater, which was also its own other thing, because like, I think our shows with Moulin Rouge specifically, it is really hard to do a lot of those shows out of a lot of our performances out of context, because mm-hmm. the world really does make so much of it come alive, I think. And like, even just us, the idea of us doing, any one of our numbers outside of the space, it just feels weird. It doesn't feel as the same. So I think the fact that we got to do it in our own space was actually really great for us. And it felt comfortable. And considering that we were coming off of not having done everything for so long, and like the Tonys was actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, it was either the same week that we opened or literally a few days later. So we had just gotten back to doing the show. Like, we had only been in rehearsals for a little bit. We're all still trying to get our stamina back and like feeling normal in our costumes. And then it was like, here we mm-hmm. go, we're doing the Tony. So like, pull up. But it actually was great that we were in our own space, because I think we all felt more comfortable there.
Yeah,
and I felt a lot easier to do this huge televised event in our own home, you know?
Sure.
I forgot about that timing, but I think it was most shows opened on like the 16th or 17th of September, then the Tonys were on the 21st. Yes. Like, it really was like a welcome back, everybody. Hope you're in shape. Get on TV.
Back to back.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. Those costumes don't leave a lot to the imagination. So it's like,
no.
It's like,
you know what else doesn't leave a lot to the imagination?
Oh, no.
Tuesdays
in the corner with Kevin.
It's Kevin's corner.
That may be my favorite. That may be my favorite transition you've ever made. Because we've terrified the guest. Okay, welcome. Hey.
We haven't revealed the fishnet leg. Like,
I know, I'm like, here we go. Welcome to Kevin's Corner, the real Moulin Rouge, where we are going to talk about whatever I want to, because I'm Kevin and it's my corner and I get to make the rules. And it's season three, so I'm going all in and being crazy with Kevin's Corner. So today I was thinking a lot about menus and ordering. So what I want to do is we're going to give you the perfect day, meaning not just that it's like perfect weather, but it's that you get to go to restaurants where you walk in and they just have everything you would possibly ever want to order. Ooh. And everything is zero calories. So it's so that you don't have to worry about any of that. So it's just your perfect meals all the way through the day. So what you're going to do is you're going to breakfast, but you're going with Kimberly. But Kimberly gets there, you guys get to the restaurant, and she's like, I have to go to the restroom to powder my nose, so order something for me. So, you know, what would be your perfect breakfast? And based on the little amount of time you've spent with Kimberly, what would you think her perfect breakfast would be?
Okay. My perfect breakfast would be definitely bacon, crispy.
I like that we start with the important things.
Yeah, yeah. Bacon. It must be crispy, no soggy bacon.
Okay.
We also need a crispy waffle, like soft in the middle, crispy around the edges.
Okay.
With very hot maple syrup. I'm not really an eggs fan, so really just bacon, the waffle,
mm-hmm.
hot cup of coffee, And what else could I do? I could do some hash browns of some sort, a crispy potato like that.
You like crispy breakfast.
I like things to be crispy.
Love it.
I like it. It's like, take your breakfast, just drop it in a fryer, pull it out. Here we go.
If it's deep fried, that's even better. I'll do
that. All about it. Okay. So that's your breakfast. That's so what do you breakfast. Think, what would you order for Kimberly?
I would order, I'm feeling like Kimberly's a pancake girl. Pancakes, eggs, sausage.
All right, we're going to the Hungry Man's
coffee.
Breakfast. Yes.
Mostly coffee.
Coffee on coffee.
That's
coffee.
But Kimberly, how do you think she did? Would that, if you came back to the table, that's what she got for you? How would you feel?
Oh yeah, I would eat it. I would be jealous of the waffle, but I would eat the pancakes.
You'd be jealous of the waffle. Okay.
You're one for one.
Some of my waffle.
So yeah. you go on throughout your day, you Zumba, you decide to run through the park and talk to squirrels. It's like really great day. And then all of a sudden it's lunchtime. You're super hungry. So you go to this incredible new restaurant that just opened up and you meet Brian, and Brian's like, hey, how's it going? I'm so excited, but I have my fiance's on the phone, so just order something for me and I'll be there in 5 seconds. So now you have to order your perfect lunch and then pick what you think would be Brian's perfect lunch.
Okay. I think my perfect lunch would probably be a burger with French fries and a big old glass of Sprite.
Ooh, solid, solid.
And the burger has all the fixings, everything. Lettuce, tomato, onions.
Crispy bacon.
Get bacon. It.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I also need the bun to be crispy. Like the butter, and then you
toast it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we want that.
And then what do you order, Brian?
Like maybe you'd have the same thing, honestly. I feel like you could really mess up a burger.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds like a delicious one. I would be very happy if that was there.
Yeah.
You're two for two. Okay, so
I would say I'm not a soda person, so okay. I would let you have my soda and I just get some water.
Okay.
That's or healthy. Tequila. Sorry, did I say water? I meant tequila.
Yeah. Tequila. A clear drink.
So you go on with your afternoon, you take in a matinee, you go to the Met and walk around and get inspired by the paintings. Exactly. You go to the river and you paint your own painting, and then you very artsy fartsy throw it into the water to be giving your art back to the world. And then you decide, oh no, it's time for dinner, and you run to meet me for dinner at this really upscale, delicious new restaurant. And so I show up and I'm like, babe, how's it going? I'm so glad to be here. This is going to be soups fun. But actually, the maitre d' recognized me from Broadway Sid, so I have to go sign an autograph. So while I'm doing that.
A very likely thing.
I was facially
actually,
recognized.
You get recognized more than anyone else because your laugh is very distinctive.
That's literally it. I was going to say, I got facially recognized from a podcast. So I'm signing an autograph. And so I'm like, order something for me. I trust you. So what is your dream dinner and what would you order for me?
Okay. My dream dinner is a steak. Medium well with more potatoes, a roasted potato.
Okay.
And I could do, we'll do a veggie. So keep it healthy, like a roasted broccoli or a spinach or something like that. I could do that. And also make sure you bring over a bread basket of some sort. Bread basket.
And the answer to do you want more bread is always yes.
Yes.
Yes. Even if you don't eat the last time that they bring it over.
Totally.
It's always yes.
Always yes. It's never no for the bread. Never.
100%.
Never.
And what would you get for me?
See, what would I get for you? I think I would get you. A pasta. Maybe like a bolognese.
Ooh.
A bolognese, like a big old bowl of
mayonnaise. Right? That's what I never ordered it. That's what a bolognese means. It's a bowl of mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's just a big bowl of mayonnaise.
Oh my God. Ew, gross. No, just like a meat sauce.
Oh, I'm all about a pasta with a meat sauce. Yeah,
pasta with a meat sauce.
Except I only eat tofu and seaweed. So try it.
That is not true.
That is,
oh my God.
That is absolutely not true.
The farthest thing from true.
My God.
That was perfect. Like, how are you still happy if
that's all you eat?
Right? That is all. And that has been Kevin's Corner.
Thank you, Kevin.
Well done, well done.
So something that I really do want to talk about is the movie that you're in, Ensemble. It's an independent film produced by our friends Aaron J. Albano and Mo Brady. It's available actually the 11th of March on Broadway On Demand. So you should check it out there.
But before we talk about Ensemble with Corey, here is a message from the delicious friend of the show, Aaron J. Albano. Yum, 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 yum.
Thanks, Brian. And aw, that was so sweet of you to say. I'm so flattered. I think your voice sounds sultry too. Anyway, hey everybody, this is Aaron Albano. You may remember me from all of my other episodes of Broadwasted. But I wanted to come on here to tell you a little bit more about the film that myself and Corey Michelle Pettenaut, friend of the show, whom you're listening to right now, took part in last year. It's a film called Ensemble. It'll be on Broadway On Demand this Friday on March 11th. And I could go on talking about it for hours and hours and hours, but I think you'd appreciate the short, pithy, press-approved blurb a little bit more. And I think it summarizes the film pretty darn well. So here goes. On the one-year anniversary of the longest shutdown in Broadway history, a multi-generational group of Broadway Ensemble members come together to both dance and reflect on the year that was, and what the world's largest stage can learn from this intermission to come back for a stronger and more equitable Act Two. This behind-the-scenes look captures cast members from the biggest hits on Broadway as they come out of isolation to examine their love of performing and how they can be the change they want to see in the world and in the industry they love. Yep, that's Ensemble. I can't wait for you all to see it. Hopefully you can see it on Broadway On Demand either this Friday on March 11th or beyond. And I can't wait for you to hear Corey talk about it just a little bit more. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Kimberly. And as we always say, zoo doo bop. Bye, everybody.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
But Corey, you are heavily featured in it as an ensemble member who is you're yourself. So let's take a step back. The movie is essentially a group of ensemble members come together, documentary style, and talk about their time during COVID and being outside of Broadway and how they're coping and what changes they'd like to see. Mm-hmm. And you're heavily featured, so talk about your experience of making that movie. And, you know, going back into a studio and for the first time after months and really moving and dancing with other bodies. I'd love to hear about your experience because we've all seen it. Yes, so I'd love to hear about your experience. Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. I mean, I had a baby over the pandemic, so I was dealing with a lot of physical change outside of just the pandemic, and everyone was dealing with physical change regardless of whether they
were
the human or not. So I felt it threefold. Like, there was just so much around, like, oh my gosh, I've just had a baby. I was dancing all through my pregnancy, but I hadn't danced really at all postpartum up until that point. Like, I was just trying to get back into shape. So, I had a lot of nervousness and fear around, like, what is this going to be like? Am I still going to be the same dancer? My body feels different. I'm going to be around all of these peers who I love and respect so much, in this place where I feel so raw and so vulnerable, and I just don't feel fully like myself. But I also was so grateful for the opportunity to share space with these people. Some of these people I knew from afar, but had never gotten to be able to sit down and have conversations with beyond, like, hey, I love your work, but like not actually getting to sit and really talk with them. So I just, like, I had so many feelings around it. I was excited. I was nervous. I was terrified. I like couldn't wait for it to happen. It was just so many things, but it was incredible to be able to be in a room with people for the first time and get to do a dance class again, and like have there be more than just you. Or at the time when I was pregnant, I was doing classes with like one or two other people in a space. But to have all of these people be in one space and dancing and cheering for one another. And it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And the pandemic was still like intense at that point. Like it was definitely feeling like we were going down a little bit of a lull, but it was still scary to be around other people. So
yeah, sure.
there was still a time, that nervousness.
It was the year anniversary of the shutdown.
Yes.
Right. So not everyone had access to vaccines yet. Yep. Mm-hmm. No one had really been in any sort of social situation in almost a year.
Let alone I mean, we had the whole
people, the most social. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and I didn't even think about the vaccine part, but we definitely had the hope, like, we'll be able to get them soon, but it was still that feeling of like, you know, hopefully we're good. And, you know, they took every precaution. We all were tested and we sat 6 feet apart from each other, you know, and we did the best that we could to keep everybody safe. But it was definitely still that moment where I think it's very different than where we are now. And I think that's important to know when watching the film, that the perspective at that time was very much like, we didn't have return dates for our jobs. We were all still kind of living in this no man's land. So it was really incredible to be able to see other people in our industry and actually commiserate with them in person, you know?
I have to say, I loved all the stuff you guys talked about. It was really like a powerful conversation and great. But one of my favorite parts was a lot of the dancing, because it was one of the first times that I ever saw like people dancing like that, where it literally felt like the scene in Center Stage where they go to the ballet, or like the ballet kids go to the Broadway dance class.
Yes.
And when she's like, just dance the shit out of it. And they all are like watching each other and cheering for each other. And like the girls are doing like little like sexy flounces at like the very gay boys who are all like, yes. Like, it was just like, that was what was happening. And I was like, oh my God, that like that scene is real. Like it can happen. All you have to do is take Broadway people away from each other for a year and let them see each other. And you've created that moment. Like,
you have created that moment.
We bottled the center stage moment.
Yes. And it's real. I mean, we were all just like, and that, even that, hearing other people like cheering for you while you were dancing, like that felt like it was a normal thing pre-pandemic, because when you're taking class with other dancers, that's what we do. Like, we cheer each other on, and especially dancers who've been around for a while. Like, we know we're not taking class to compete with each other. We're just taking class to vibe and like enjoy the space. So it was really cool to experience that again, you know, and be able to show love to each other.
Do you think that that helped to spur the conversation and to open up people's like vulnerability because of like opening up to each other physically in that way?
Absolutely. Because like I said, I think we all were feeling very insecure about dancing again. Like a lot, we didn't really talk about this too much in the film, but we did talk about it before we started shooting, that a lot of us had not taken any dance classes at all during this entire time. So you figure you go from either doing 8 shows a week or taking a bunch of class or auditioning a bunch to literally zilch nothing. You don't know if you can trust your body again to do the things it was doing before, because you're at peak shape when you're doing 8 shows a week. There's nothing more physical than doing that. And I don't care what show you're in, you could be doing a relatively non-physical show and you're still going to be in peak shape in some kind of way. So we were all feeling like super nervous around just being around each other, dancing, and like, are we all going to feel good about ourselves and what we're doing? So I think it was such a good icebreaker for all of us, because by the time we got to the end of the class, everyone was just feeling so happy to be there that we were able to sort of strip off the armor and the protection mechanisms that we may have built up of around ourselves, of keeping ourselves in this kind of isolated box. And we could actually communicate with each other physically. And then in turn, when we sat in the circle, we felt a lot more free to be open about what we were really feeling.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
And did you feel, I figure out how to ask the best way. I'm going to ask something else instead. So what would you feel about, like, I keep thinking of, like, it was such a snapshot of a moment in time and like a mindset. If you came back now or like in 2 weeks when it is the 2-year anniversary of the shutdown, like how would that change the conversation in a way, or does everything sort of still stand?
I mean, I think a lot of the things that we talked about are still relevant. They still stand. You know, Broadway is back now and it wasn't a year ago. And it's actually really crazy to think that like it'll be the 2-year anniversary and
insane.
Just I just can't believe that. But I think with Broadway being back, there's even more accountability that still needs to happen. And so a lot of the things that we were talking about, there have been some changes, but there have also been some things that have eased right on back into business as usual. So I think, you know, if we were able to sit and really have a conversation around that now, I'd be curious to hear from other people and their experiences, because a lot of people have moved on to other shows, or you know, Carla is now choreographing a lot more and is not doing Hamilton anymore. So a lot of people have transitioned in other ways in the business. Yeah. So I would just be interested to sort of hear everyone's perspectives now, having been back in the world now for a year, and sort of see what changes they may have felt, you know?
Yeah. Which is why it's such a cool time for this movie to come out, because now the viewer is in the mindset of watching what has changed or what like happened while Broadway came back, and you get to go back and be like, right, but there was a moment in time we were all kind of on the same page about things that needed to happen and things that needed to change, and sort of bringing that conversation back now after everyone just kind of went, we're back at work.
Totally. Because that was a whole, like, we didn't even have a chance to really recalibrate. And I think everybody was all under the impression, all of us got information from our different shows about like easing back into it and, you know, let's take our time. And then all of a sudden it was like, ah, we're back, Tony's, all the things. And so there wasn't like a lot of breathing room to like really kind of access some of the trauma that we've all experienced and kind of go through that and then really address some of the issues that came up during the hiatus. So, you know, I think that it's a conversation that is ever evolving. It's continuing to happen and grow. And I think the thing that we've really taken from, and I've really taken from Ensemble specifically, is that it just really helped me clarify that artists and specifically Ensemble members are such an integral part of this business and so incredibly smart and knowledgeable and valuable. And that I just felt so grateful that they decided to really showcase our stories in that way, because, you know, we were considered non-essential for so long, but we are essential to so many people, and not only the world, but specifically New York City and the pulse of New York City. So I just feel so grateful that this thing is about to be released into the world so that people can see a little bit of what we go through, like what our lives are like.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That. And just a reminder, this Friday, March 11th, Broadway On Demand, you can check out Ensemble. Again, it is a documentary about the Broadway shutdown, told from the perspective of Ensemble members in Broadway shows, talking about what they'd love to see change, what they miss, all done in a dance studio after the first time getting together to dance again. It's a beautiful film. It's a funny film. We highly recommend it. Corey is just one of the many people who are Ensemble members who are featured and telling their stories throughout the documentary. So definitely would highly suggest it. And we'll be doing some more stuff about Ensemble on Patreon as well.
And go ahead, Kimberly.
I was gonna say, if you are a student or someone who recently graduated and you are looking for an insight into the business you want to be a part of, I think it's almost required viewing because the conversations around just the business model of Broadway is fascinating and things that people should hear before they enter this workforce.
And just for anybody out there who happens to be like me and have thought that a chorus line was a farce, kind of like noises off, to then discover it was basically what this movie is. It's really cool to watch this and be like, no, this is what Chorus Line is, and tell your friends that instead of telling them that you thought it was a farce, like, voices off, because then they'll all laugh at you. So watch this.
Start doing research instead of just like, well, based on the title and one song I've heard, yes. That's what this musical's about.
I have made a decision about this entire musical. That's what I thought. Yep. So just watch this movie and you'll be like, oh, this is what A Chorus Line was based off of, was bringing people together and talking. So obviously, if you can make that kind of magic, this movie is something you definitely want to check out for the new generation of magic makers on Broadway.
Awesome. Well, should we play a game?
Yes.
Sure. I made up a very silly game in my head on the subway home from work called Because Now We Can. Oh my God. I have some older shows in my Lights of Broadway show card pile. When it's your turn, I'll grab a show for you. And then you get to choose something from present day that we can do now that we couldn't have done when this show was originally on Broadway to add to that show, whether it is a specific writer, a casting choice, a technological advancement that you think might be cool. You know,
all
doing all
it.
Of Gypsy in the metaverse through an Oculus. Something like,
wow.
Just really go for something that we can only do now.
Got it.
Brian, do you want to go first?
Kevin can go first.
Oh, Kevin, just do my favorite game of Say When.
When?
Fiddler on the Roof. Speaking of shows you don't know
Yay!
Anything about.
Yay! I learned about that's another one. It's another one that I thought was a farce.
A lighthearted comedy about five daughters tricking their father.
That's what I thought. I thought it was about like three daughters tricking their father into letting them marry whoever they want. And at the end, he was like, darn, you tricked me. And then I was like, no, this is so much sadder. Okay. So I just take something Fiddler on the Roof that didn't have when it was an original production that they could use now.
Yes.
Great. Okay, that I think would really help the production.
Yes.
Debatable.
Okay.
Debatable. What
okay.
do you think would be cool?
Okay. I think that it would be really cool to do a production of Fiddler on the Roof where there is a screen, like a la Dear Evan Hansen, where those screens are moving around all the time. But it's, you know how like the Dear Evan Hansen screens are like, go up from the stage and then they slide along. These ones would be like parallel to the stage. So they would be moving almost like flat, like flats up and down. But it would constantly be like a black and white drawing of a fiddler. And I feel like you would use this big screen and put it in different places around the stage. And like, so no matter what's happening, the fiddler is kind of like playing or responding to what's happening in the action. Like as like almost like how like a Tinkerbell is like the background of like Peter Pan kind of a thing, like a like that. But it's just like you use that to kind of make your, I don't know. I just feel like that would be a cool set choice to use that. A little fiddler man.
Brian, would you like a turn?
Yeah, let's do this.
Say when.
When.
Wicked.
Ooh. Oh. Wicked is done like
you
with
drones.
You can't
pull from the Hamburg production.
Wicked is now done with drones and maybe like jetpacks or something.
Wow.
Okay.
Flying around stage.
Yeah, she's actually flying around. Whatever magic they were using in Aladdin, we just take over here. No.
The straight up magic.
No, I think you do drones. I think that with like, wait, let me take a step back. Is it the production or when it takes place?
The production.
Wait, what? So like it's something that they didn't have in like the early 2000s, as
exactly,
opposed to
something they didn't have in 2003.
Yeah.
That you would throw into it now.
Yeah, I guess they had drones. Or maybe they didn't. I don't know when drones became more droney.
The government has had drones for many, many years.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
They've been used at like the Super Bowl.
Not for Broadway theaters, yes.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to go with
drones.
I'm going to go with drones. And we can do it one of two ways. She's being carried around by drones. Or the drones are the set. So like they move together like they did in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Oh my God.
I haven't seen that yet.
Ugh. No, the one with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So like
oh yeah.
With the projections and their drones flying around with Mysterio stuff. I mean, he was a director essentially in that movie.
Yeah.
And so she's flying around. Maybe you do something like with the tornado with that, with when Dorothy comes in, you can use the drone for like maybe the dragon and the clock. You can like add more of that to the show. You can have flying monkeys flying around the auditorium. Her, obviously.
To the actress flying on drones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's still flying on drones.
They're like in her shoes. Like, how is this work?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I think that like she's on a platform and the drones are holding her up or something like that.
Equity will figure it out. It's fine.
Yeah. As they do. I'm going with drones. I think Wicked with drones would be wild.
Great.
I love that you're like, in summation, drones.
Drones.
Yeah, drones.
Honestly, I'll buy a ticket to see that. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
You're welcome, everyone.
Yeah. The review, Wicked, drones on.
Drones.
Yeah, exactly.
Corey, would you like a turn?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead and say when.
When?
Sweeney Todd.
Oh my God. I've never seen that musical.
Do you want to try another one?
Yeah. Another one.
Okay. Say when.
When?
You like Camelot or My Fair Lady? I was on both of them.
My Fair Lady.
Great. My Fair Lady.
My fair.
I just want to let you know an option is drones.
Listen, I think that can you imagine if like when he was singing The Rain in Spain, they like had drones as rain.
Oh my God.
And like,
yes.
Eliza get my slippers. She's like, let the drones get it for you. Like,
I, well, drones exist in the world, not even.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. In My Fair Lady, he owns drones. If none of the drones are a part of this, yeah, yeah, totally.
He's no longer an English teacher. He's an inventor.
He has a drone shop.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
I can't.
It's a drone shop. Honestly, yeah, drones work for all of these musicals. They do. You put drones in, upgrade. Check in. Honestly, I was thinking drones. Holograms. Yes. I think holograms would be interesting. You could bring in people from the past to play that, play the role.
Starring Rex Harrison again.
What?
Let's do a hologram. A hologram, yeah. Fair Lady.
And it changes every night who the hologram is.
Yes.
What? Wait.
In rep?
What if the show, what if you use a hologram for Eliza and the show is about how
drones?
He's challenged that he can't make a holographic, not real woman come off like a real person at a party. And so he's training her, he's programming her, but also building like the hologram to be better and better with imaging so that at the end
we're giving Eliza less agency in this revival.
Right. So it's more about seeing if he can make a holographic woman seem like a real person at a party.
But turns out he was the hologram all along.
Yes.
Or first of all, okay, I got two things to say. First of all, you have to do
drones.
The drones. So you get Julie Andrews to reprise her role on Broadway, but the drones de-age her in a real time.
Oh. Whoa.
That's
they
one.
Project the age, like
that's yeah. some,
like
that's some real Mysterio, younger,
like Benjamin Button.
Yeah, yes! 100%.
The other way around.
Oh no, you just do a Benjamin Button musical and you do it that way. Also, I now need to see a production of Sunday in the Park with George where Act Two is about drones.
Chromaloom.
The Chromaloon is drones, and then you have a drone projection of him, kind of similar to what the revival did. Like, what was it, 15 years ago, whatever it was?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I also want. This game is now, how do you add drones to a musical?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's actually, we changed the game, Kimberly.
It's fine. My turn. Let's add a drone. Someone to give me a say when.
About drones.
When?
I will add drones to Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Oh my god!
The drones in Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Easy. That the shimmy dress.
Like all drones.
The drone dress.
When she like shakes that like fringy dress, it's all drones. And then when she like shakes them off one at a time, and then
it's like a costume reveal.
It's a costume reveal.
Oh my god!
All the costumes. And then those drones go over and like peel the costumes away from everyone else. Then they're her backup dancers.
There's got to be one guy in the audience who's like, that has to be the last one. There can't be another one in that dress. And she shimmies again and it pops like, no, there's another one. Like there's that one guy who like, it's like every morning is Christmas morning, but it surprises him when a new drone comes out.
Wait,
and then the drones bring them all of their drinks because they're in the cafe. And then every song is in a completely different bar because the drones change the set.
Okay, hear me out. I got two ideas. What if every seat has like an ordering platform, like in a movie theater or whatnot, and then the drones serve you drinks from the bar on stage.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Oh my god.
One.
Wait, hold on. Corey, do you want to be in a show where while you're singing, drones are flying around over your head with gin and tonics?
Yes.
Also,
I do.
But you might get one by accident.
Yes, I absolutely
totally do. Separate from this. The Nutcracker Ballet with drones, where like the big dress and everything flies out from underneath it.
And the Christmas tree gets big.
Oh, a Christmas tree drone. Yeah.
The dolls are drones. They're all drones.
Can you imagine like the sugar plum?
The rats.
The rats. The rats in the soldier fights.
Yes. I want all of us to sit down.
We need 6-year-old ballerinas. We have drones.
I want us all to do a presentation in front of all the biggest.
The Nutcracker again.
All the biggest producers on Broadway. We're going to get a meeting with them. And we're like to pitch a show. And we're like, all right, listen to us. Ready?
Listen to
this. Drones.
Yeah, picture literally, we'll be like, drones. Pick whatever show you want. Drones.
A show that's already running? We'll pop them
in. Instant hit, y'all. Instant hit.
You're going to tell me.
All drones?
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that Hugh Jackman wouldn't want drones in his show? I doubt that.
Music man with drones.
Yeah.
Yes. He doesn't get them instruments. He gets them drones.
Instead of 76 drones.
Drones.
76 new drones in the Music Man.
This is great.
Oh, I'm obsessed with drones.
That's what we can do now.
Oh, we're brilliant.
We are.
I love that we just changed that game.
Yeah, we said, you know what? The game is actually drones. How do you add drones?
It's a game of drones.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
We did it.
We did it, guys. I'm proud of us. Well,
on that note, that does bring us to the end of our episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Check out Ensemble this Friday on Broadway on Demand. It's great. Featuring Corey here. Corey, where else can we find you? What else is happening?
Oh, you can find me on the good old social medias. you can find me on social media, KMR8787 on the Insta. I've just joined the TikTok. Ooh. I thought I was too old, but I've done it. Same handle, KMR8787.
And then you
also have your own podcast.
Yes, you have the Gift of Gab as well, right?
Yes, I have the Gift of Gab as well.
Who's myself. Gab? Does she need a drone?
She's a drone.
Love it.
Myself and three other beautiful Broadway mamas who all had their babies during the pandemic, we have started a podcast called Mother. We are on Spotify. We also have a YouTube channel and we have an Instagram page as well if you want to follow us there. But we talk about all things new motherhood, along with being an artist and juggling being a working artist, specifically in New York City, while raising a child. So it's a very interesting listen, I think. And we are all also Black women. So that's an interesting perspective that we bring as well. So
love it.
Listen to us there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. You can follow us at Broadwasted on social media, Twitter, Instagram. Join our Facebook group for some theater nerdy stuff. You can find us on Patreon. We're going to be talking more about Ensemble on Patreon. You can find us wherever podcasts are found, like Spotify, like Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
And thank you.
We end every episode with a quote. And today's quote is, "What I did for drones, what I did for drones."
Perfect.
Well done.
But we end every episode, we raise a glass, and we say,
Zoot-doo-ah-bum.
Cheers.
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 Drones. Drones.
What I did for drones.
Yeah. What I did for drones.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.